looking at healing miracles of Christ, and read the first 10 verses, and what we have here is the centurion's servant being healed. Matthew also records this in Matthew chapter 8, verses 5 through verse 13, but we'll read Luke's account. In Luke chapter 7, again reading with verse 1. Now when he had ended all his sayings in the audience of the people, he entered into Capernaum. And a certain centurion's servant, who was dear unto him, was sick and ready to die. When he heard of Jesus, he sent unto him the elders of the Jews, beseeching him that he would come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, that is, these elders of the Jews, they besought him instantly, saying that he was worthy for whom he should do this, referring to the centurion. For he loveth our nation, and he hath built us a synagogue. Then Jesus went with them, and when he was now not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying unto him, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldst enter under my roof. Wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but say in a word, and my servant shall be healed. For I also am a man set under authority, having under me soldiers. And I say unto thee, unto one, go, and he goeth, and to another, come, and he cometh. And to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned him about, and said unto the people that followed him, I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. And they that were sent would be the elders of the Jews and centurion's friends, returning to the house, found the servant whole that had been sick. Again, only Matthew and Luke record this particular miracle. It involves a servant of a certain centurion. A centurion was a Roman soldier in charge of 100 soldiers. This centurion was an officer, as centurions were, and this particular centurion would have been in charge of the Roman garrison located in Capernaum. And we see Jesus enters into Capernaum in verse 1, and he did so for this particular centurion. He did so for this particular servant of this centurion. Again, Jesus always had a reason for wherever he went, always had a purpose. And we see just as he went to the pool of Bethesda, he went there for one man. We see here that he goes for this, goes into Capernaum for the sake of this centurion who was burdened over his servant, and also, of course, for the servant's sake. We see Luke records that this centurion had a servant that was dear unto him there in verse 2. That is, this centurion loved this particular servant. He cherished him. He esteemed this servant. He had a respect for this servant. And this servant, in the process of time, became ill. And what we read here is Jesus healing this man. As you look at the healing miracles of Christ, we know, of course, that Jesus did not always heal in the same way, did not always use the same methods. He used a variety of methods. Jesus is not limited. Jesus is not bound to any particular method. But this particular miracle, Jesus healed this servant without seeing him. Jesus, of course, in his omniscience and his omnipresence, being God, could see him, but with the physical eye, he healed this man without ever seeing him. He healed this man without ever going to him. He never went to where this servant was. And he healed this man without this servant ever coming to him. So this is a bit different from the majority of Christ's healing miracles. Again, he heals this man without seeing him. He hears this man, heals this man without going to him. He heals this man without this man coming to him. He also healed this man without any command given to the servant. He didn't command the servant to do anything. He did not give the servant any instruction, nor did he give the centurion any instruction. And we see throughout the miracles, we see Christ issuing a command to the recipient of the miracle, or issuing some sort of instruction to the recipient of the miracle. But in this case, there is no command. There is no instruction to the recipient. No doubt there was a command given, and that command would have been given to the palsy, to what made this man so desperately ill, but even that is not recorded. So this man is healed and spared with a word spoken, not in the man's presence, but with a word spoken from a distance. The first thing we want to notice is the condition of this man. We read that he was sick. Both Matthew and Luke record that he was sick. We see in Matthew 8 and verse 6 that he was sick, and we see here in Luke 7 verse 2, unto him we see was sick. So, being sick, this man is now in a weakened condition. He's not well. He's doing poorly. Matthew records the cause of this servant's sickness. There, Matthew records what was wrong with him. And we see in Matthew chapter 8, and verse 6, he was sick of the palsy. He was sick of the palsy. What that means is that this man had some form of paralysis. He had lost the ability in some part of his body, perhaps his whole body, we don't know. But he had lost the ability to move. There was a reduction in the man's motion in some part or parts of his body, and this was due to some nerve-related disorder. He had the palsy. He had a form of paralysis. Matthew also records in verse 6 that the servant was lying at home sick of the palsy. So this man's paralysis had caused him to be homebound. He was at home sick of the palsy. That is, he was deprived of energy. He was deprived of activity. This is not the first man in the New Testament that we read of that had the palsy. Remember in Mark chapter 2, we looked at the man who was carried by four others into a house where Jesus was, and we are told that that man had the palsy. We also saw on another occasion in Matthew 4 and verse 24 that they had brought several sick people to Jesus, and we read there were those who had the palsy. So this was something that was fairly common in that day, that is, this paralysis. So this man was sick. This man had a paralysis. Now, we're also told that he was suffering. He was suffering. Notice again in Matthew 8, in verse 6, we read that he was grievously tormented. He was grievously tormented. The word tormented refers to the man's actual suffering. It conveys the idea of agony, conveys the idea of torture, great pain, great anguish, sense of trauma. And so, without a doubt, this servant was in a condition of distress. This servant was in a condition of great misery. But it says that he was grievously tormented. That would refer to the degree of the man's suffering. The suffering is described by the word tormented. The degree of his suffering is described by that word grievously. That is, he was severely tormented. He was in a very grave condition. He was in a very dreadful condition, a very terrible, awful, a crushing condition. This man was grievously tormented. Now, we see also that he was near to death. Notice in Luke chapter 7, again, Luke being the physician, says in verse 2 that he was sick. Luke does not tell us the form of sickness. Matthew gives us that information. And Matthew records how the man was suffering. All Luke tells us is that he was sick and ready to die. That is, he was on the verge of death. That is, this man's condition was very critical. His condition was very dire. His need was urgent. If something was not done, he would die. He could not continue to live in this condition. Something in this man's condition had to change if he was going to live. Without this change, he most certainly would die. So this is a very, very pressing need for this individual. And I believe the centurion certainly realized how sick his servant was, or he would not have sent to Jesus. And the centurion, I believe, realized that this servant was near unto death, that he could not live much longer in this condition. So we have a threefold description of this man's condition. He was sick of the palsy. That is, he was a paralytic. He was suffering greatly. He was grievously tormented. And we see, thirdly, that he was nigh unto death. He was about to die. Matthew, going on to the centurion, because the centurion, we see the condition of the servant. The centurion really is an example to God's people. And though Matthew, notice in Matthew chapter 8, in verse 5, and when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him. Now, this centurion did not literally come to Jesus. This is made very clear from Luke's account. And notice, if we go back to Luke's account, in Luke chapter 7 and verse 3, and when he heard of Jesus, he sent unto him the elders of the Jews. And these elders of the Jews represented this centurion. So it was as if the centurion had personally come because his representatives were there. We are later told, of course, why this centurion sent these people to Jesus rather than coming himself. But we see here in verse 3 of Luke chapter 7 that he sent unto him the elders of the Jews. Again, this man had authority. He not only had authority over the 100 Roman soldiers, he also obviously had some authority over the elders of the Jews, the religious people of the Jews. And this man, being a centurion, of course, was a Gentile, but he had some authority. He had some respect, as we will see in a moment, amongst the Jews. So he sends these elders, and then in verse 6 has Jesus and these elders are headed to the place where this servant was. We see the centurion sent friends to him. He sent some friends to Jesus. So now we have the elders of the Jews representing this centurion, and we have some friends of the centurion representing him before Jesus Christ. Now, as we read Luke's account, we see what these elders of the Jews thought of this centurion, which tells us much about his character. First of all, that he had a servant that he loves tells us something about his character. That's unusual for a master to love his servant. So we immediately learn something of this man's character. But we see, as we read Luke's account, exactly what the elders of the Jews thought of the centurion, though they were somewhat misguided in their reasoning. They did think very highly of the centurion. These elders of the Jews who approached Christ on behalf of the centurion, they thought very highly of this centurion. We see this because when they came to Christ, it says that they, in verse 4, they besought him instantly. They were sent plead with Jesus Christ, and when they saw Jesus Christ, they instantly, without any delay, they began to plead, not so much the condition of the servant, they began to plead the merit of the centurion. And this is where they were a bit misguided, because what Jesus would do was not based upon merit. The centurion realized that. But these religious people, these elders of the Jews, they didn't realize this. And we see that the first thing they say concerning the centurion is that he loved this servant. In verse 4, and when they came to Jesus, they besought him instantly, saying that he was worthy for whom he should. They begin to declare his merit. And they declared that he loved this servant. This servant was very dear unto this centurion. But they also thought that this centurion was worthy. They thought he was worthy of the blessings of God, saying that he was worthy for whom he, Jesus, should do this. This centurion is, in the eyes of these elders of the Jews, he is worthy of Christ performing this miracle on his behalf. Man is never worthy. That being said, it shows how highly these people thought of this centurion. In their minds, if there was anyone who was worthy, certainly it was this centurion. So they believed he was worthy of the Lord's blessing. They looked upon this centurion as a man of love. He said, notice in verse 5, for he loveth our nation. He loveth our nation. He's a Gentile. But he loves the Jewish people. And because of that, we think he's worthy. This is a reason that you should heal this man's servant. The servant is dear unto him. And this man loves our nation. He is certainly worthy of the blessings of God. Again, they are misguided. But it does show how highly they thought of this centurion, which tells us something about the character of this centurion. It says, "For he loveth our nation." That is, he was a man who had shown the Jewish people compassion. He was a man who had shown the Jewish people that he cared. He was a man who showed that he had concern for the Jewish people. He was a man who exercised friendship and kindness and unselfishness. And they also looked upon him as a man of generosity. It says in verse 5, "And he hath built us a synagogue." He hath built us a synagogue. Again, this is remarkable in itself. This man was a Gentile by birth, and yet he built with his own money, with his own means, he built the people a synagogue. Now, again, this all shows something of the man's character. It also shows something about the nature of man. They thought he was worthy because of really what he had done for them. He loved them. And he hath built us a synagogue. This man's been good to us. He's worthy. And usually that's how people just declare someone's worth, is what have they done for me? And that's the case here. And there's much to be learned from that. But he was a man of generosity. We see, we'll look next week at what the centurion thought of himself. His view of himself is far more accurate than the view of the people. But again, what we've seen so far is this servant's condition. He's in dire need. He's in urgent need. His condition needs to be changed. If his condition is not changed, he will die. And we see something concerning the character of the centurion, which really had nothing to do with what Jesus would do. Because what Jesus would do would be completely the grace of the Lord. Let's look to the Lord in a word of prayer. Heavenly Father,